Hello, everyone. This is episode 23 of the Justin Files podcast, a member of the Broken Jars Network. And Alex was wrong. Murphy's not going to die. I found a comment from Priscilla saying that Jim was just trolling with the tweet about Murphy's funeral, and we shouldn't really take it seriously then. Yay, she's not going to die. He was wrong. Eat shit.
That's the most important part of this episode.
Yes. Yeah, we're done now. We can just end it now.
Yeah, episode over.
Call that Alex was wrong.
Yes, and now I get to have this live or recorded and everything, so I can just play it back at him every time he annoys me. Yeah. Other news is Jim's going to Sweden, Stockholm and Gothenburg at the later of this month, and that'll be fun for anyone in Sweden. Maybe Andreas should get over there for a little bit, ask him a few questions.
Maybe. I might be too lazy to go, but it could happen.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we only have me and Alex and Andreas and John. John, say hi.
Hello.
Yeah, and Justin wasn't able to join, unfortunately. Very sad. And John, what are your three favorite books and your favorite character?
So my three favorite books, in no particular order, are Deadbeat because Zombie Dinosaur, Cold Days and Skin Game because Jim's more recent work has definitely really been top quality in terms of like what I'm looking for in a book.
I just want to make sure you didn't say Ghost Story, right? That Ghost Story was not one of the books.
I enjoyed Ghost Story. I thought it was a good book.
We enjoy all the books, but yeah, Ghost Story is definitely not one of the better ones.
It's a good one.
I'm kidding. Those are three
good books. I enjoyed Ghost Story. And my favorite character, I'm going to waffle and pick two. My two favorite characters are John Marcone and Binder.
Yes.
So, in the beginning of the show, what I used to do is if people pick two and they refuse to pick one, I would make them choose one character that lives, and that character has to kill the other character. So.
Oh, Marcone kills Binder every time.
There you go.
Yeah. See, because Marcone's a good guy. You have to get over it. Marcone is a good guy.
I'd say Binder is a better is on this morality scale.
I love Binder.
Binder's fun.
He's
but
less
Marcone's
evil.
A good guy.
Binder's less evil than Marcone.
But Binder is pretty much true neutral if you want.
Yeah.
To
yeah, he's about as close as you can get to that while also being a selfish bastard. And Marcone does things to help kids not get hurt as much.
No, I'd say Marcone's
true. I don't think Binder'd give a shit about kids.
I'd say Marcone is like neutral evil.
Yeah.
You're going to find out. Marcone's going to turn out a good guy. Got and he's going to be undeniably good, and you're going to have to eat shit
again. I don't think he's Murphy's
evil. Murphy's it was said here first, folks.
We should do a D&D episode like with alignments for characters. That would be fun.
Okay. We'll save that topic. And if you have suggestions on who is what, then share it with us, because I love getting feedback and suggestions and everything. Yeah, and on to that. Okay, fine, Alex. If you want to hear more about what's going on at Broken Jars, then you can listen at the end for all of the plugs and updates and bullshit. But onto this topic of the episode is a very big what if of, like, what if something had changed previously? Not, like, speculation of what's going to happen. So, the first one we're going to start out with is the one that John said is his favorite, is what if John Marcone is Jane Marcone?
So what if John Marcone was female?
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think in some other series and other authors, I might say the books would change more dramatically, but I don't really think so. Like, we've seen very powerful baddies that are female, like Lara Wraith. I don't know. Do you think it would really change that much?
I think, in essence, it would be pretty similar.
I don't know. I kind of disagree with that because of Harry's, like, overwhelming sense of chivalry. And the fact that Lara Wraith, like, his difference with Lara Wraith and, like, that kind of conflict, that comes from him, like, continually telling himself that Lara Wraith is not human. She is a monster. She is a monster. She is a monster. She is not a human. So, like, he can justify himself to himself why he has that kind of antagonistic relationship with Lara, but for someone like if John Marcone were Jane Marcone, I would, especially as early as Stormfront, because that's when their first interaction is, in like chapter 2 or 3. That really could, like, his sense of chivalry could really change what happens there. And, like, I think it would be really interesting if, like, Harry ended up signing on to work for Jane Marcone.
I don't think he would do that.
I mean, whether or not he did the deal in Stormfront to just go away and let John do whatever he wanted, this is going to get confusing with these names. In Full Moon, when Marcone is actually, like, in peril because of the Loop Guru, if Jane Marcone asked for help, Harry would have helped.
Every time. Mm-hmm. Every time.
Yeah.
And it would have been interesting because he keeps trying to say that Marcone's a bad guy, and then there's times in, like, Changes when Marcone doesn't want a kid to get hurt because he's a good guy, and Harry has to, God damn it, stop making me like you.
That happens a lot, and I think, I don't know, I think, like, this is kind of me shipping, like, a really weird version of a relationship between Harry and female John Marcone. That would be, like, Jim could have done some really silly things with that. It would have been really interesting to see that develop.
Yeah, that is a really good point. The relationship between them would have been much different.
And then you also have, like, possible love triangle problems with Murphy.
Mm.
But, well, okay, that's a good question then. Do we think Harry would actually be attracted to someone who is as evil as Marcone?
If Harry's is going to sign on with the female Marcone and make money that way, does Harry even develop a relationship or a continuous friendship with Murphy, because he's kind of working for a bad guy now? She probably wouldn't want him to work for them.
Wait. Well, we're assuming that Harry would work for a female Marcone? I do not assume that.
John, I didn't agree with it, but John said he thought that would happen.
No, I don't agree with that, no.
Well, I think that in Full Moon, even if he didn't sign the contract, he would have helped Jane Marcone, actively helped him, and not just at the end when they're in a pit and all of them need to help each other. And that would have caused more problems between him and Murphy. And that would have just been, like, I don't know, I like problems.
No. Yeah. I don't think so. I think, because, I don't know, I just don't think so.
I think if Jane Marcone still had, like, the really well-thought-out mentality that Marcone has, just, like, she could get Dresden to do pretty much anything by coming to him with the puppy dog eyes and maybe shedding a tear and just being like, please, chivalry, work for me. Like, she, Jane Marcone could probably do that to Harry every time.
Well, see, the best, like, counter I can think of to this, and the most close example in the story already is, what's her name?
Helen Beckett?
No, all the way at the end. In Skin Game.
Sarissa? Hannah Asher?
Hannah Asher. Like, he could have just left that situation, right? He didn't have to kill her, even though she was a Denarian. I mean, I think that makes her...
She was attacking him.
Yeah,
but he could have just walked away. He had enough power to walk away. You know,
he didn't have enough.
No, he didn't.
He didn't have enough power to walk away.
He probably knew that wasn't going to end up killing her.
He killed her in the way that her own actions led to her death. Right. And that's about as justice as he can get for that. He had to end her fighting him, and that wasn't going
to
happen.
I don't think he had to. That's what I'm saying. I don't think he had to. But I'm saying the fact that...
Why did you think he had to? Like, I want to know, what is your reasoning? Because I think it was pretty clear he had to.
Because... I don't think he was choosing to kill her. I think at that point he knew there was nothing he could do, right? So he could have made a choice to either leave or drop a bunch of rocks on her. But either one, I don't think
he couldn't leave. She would attack him.
Yeah.
I thought at that point in the story it was like all going to hell and he could have just ran.
She would attack him if he ran.
Yeah, that happened because Hannah Asher was throwing lava everywhere. Like, the vault started melting because of the lava.
The vault started, I know, so yeah. Everything is collapsing around them, right? Maybe I'm misremembering the end.
So yeah, Hannah, Janosqua, and Nicodemus versus Gray, Michael, and Harry.
Right. This is basically
Harry 1v1's Asher. Harry's like keeps trying to get Asher to just back down.
Right.
And he's just like, all right, fine. I'm gonna make your fire go upwards towards the ceiling, and then lava happened.
So if Harry hadn't done that, you guys are saying Harry would have died.
How do you incapacitate someone like that?
I'm saying he didn't have to incapacitate her. They all were leaving that situation anyway.
If they left without incapacitating Asher in some way, they would have been killed. Because
I disagree.
We're on the losing side of that battle. But with Asher killed or incapacitated in some way, they can leave. That's why it had to happen.
Right, so I didn't want to get hung up on this anyway.
A specific question here. What is stopping Asher from killing Harry, Michael, and Goodman
the
Gray?
The collapsing of the cave.
Which happened because of her.
Which happened because Harry chose to kill her.
The cave is
collapsing, wasn't it?
Nope.
The cave is not collapsing. Janoska's running around smashing shit up. Hannah's throwing magic, smashing shit up, but the cave itself is not really collapsing.
It was my understanding that it was collapsing. If I'm misunderstanding, then that's on me.
But I
think whether the cave was collapsing or not, there was still other chances for Harry to treat her differently, and he chose not to. That's really
well. He tried to get her.
I will say he tried to reason with her, but she was not letting it go.
Yeah, I think he tried
Harry
to.
Harry made efforts all throughout that book. At the beginning, when he was just like, Hannah makes some remark about how there are no scars on his back when they're changing together before they go meet Valmont.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's just like, make sure you remember that there's no scars on my back, because I don't run from shit. Then
my point was that even
while they're breaking into the vault, Harry realizes that because Hannah got turned down by himself and got turned down by Binder, that she might be feeling alone. So then he like goes on this like self-deprecating ramble at her to try and make her feel better about it. Like throughout the book, he's trying to like get Asher on her side. And then when Asher's all Denarii'd out and just like throwing fire at everyone, Harry's just like, well, if I turn around and walk away, I'm probably going to die. So I have to do something about it.
I'm going to reread through that. I'm running it differently, but my point is, he's even after all the growth of 15 books, he's still treating her, even though she's a woman, as someone to be, especially in that last battle, as someone to be feared and defeated, right?
In that last battle, she's a Denarian, though.
Right.
Yeah,
in Harry's book is not a mortal.
But I think
Harry
that
never has a problem with women being scary.
No, I think it makes it even more sympathetic because she's a human being who is being controlled by. I just think that is more closely related than Lara Wraith to a possible Jane Marcone.
Right,
who's controlling Jane Marcone, though?
The clearest relation between Jane Marcone and any other woman is Helen Beckett.
I agree with that.
And so, like, if you think of Jane Marcone as Helen Beckett, Harry never, like, has feelings toward her. He never even marks that she's pretty, other than the fact that she's polished and cool and controlled in her own way. She wears pearls and pumps and everything like that. But it's the comparison from Jane Marcone to Asher falls flat when you should just be like comparing it to Beckett.
I guess I can see it both ways. Especially since for most of the book she's not a Denarian. I just don't think he would.
A Denarian for the whole book.
Yeah, she already had the coin before the book.
The reveal. You don't. Harry
she's already
know
a bad guy.
I get what you mean, Alex.
Yeah. Like, the whole point is that Harry doesn't really treat women differently, whether they're monsters or not, if they're working towards evil. I definitely don't think he would work for Jane Marcone. Because every example we've seen, even the ones where they're not monsters, he still treats them with caution and treats them like they're bad guys.
Yeah,
okay,
isn't completely a dumbass.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Me? He isn't completely a dumbass.
Right.
So he would still be like wary of a Jane Marcone. He would also just be compelled to help her more often.
I don't think so. I think he would be more conflicted but I don't think he would be compelled to help her.
I don't know. The chivalry runs pretty strong in Harry.
That kind of conflict would be because he feels compelled.
Yeah.
Right, but he wouldn't actually help her.
Okay. Let's agree to disagree and move on.
Okay.
Okay, but other things, Ms. Jane Marcone would probably have more of a cat-fighty relationship with Laura Wraith, which it would be kind of fun to watch.
Yes, that would be hilarious.
And then there's... I had a lot of fun with this question. Jane Marcone still sleeping with Helen Beckett?
I have
Cujo Hendricks. Cujo Hendricks, every time.
No. But no, Hendricks has to go with
I don't know if Jane Marcone is bisexual, but I'm pretty sure Helen Beckett would be.
Yeah.
Helen Beckett would sleep with anyone if it got her closer to avenging her daughter's death.
Yeah, but, you know,
she's an ambiguous character because she, on one hand, wants revenge. On the other hand, she seems to genuinely care for Marcone.
Well, she says... conflicted. I think she says it best in Small Favor. She says something to the effect of, like, love and hate are very similar emotions. They both involve lots of passion.
Very focused on other people. And,
Yeah. So, like, in her mind, she's justifying it as they're the same.
Yeah, I like that kind of hint of a conflict in her, that maybe she does love him in some way, but she also does hate him. And I want to see more of that, and I want to see it blow up in everyone's faces.
You want to see everything blow up in everyone's faces, though.
Yeah, I know. It's fun.
We all understand that Harry doesn't say fuego enough.
Yeah, there needs to be more buildings on fire and all of them his fault.
So what was the next one? That's what if changes had been book 10 instead of book 12?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my favorite. I heard that he had it intended that way, but I also heard that, like, he didn't even think he had it intended that way. Like, someone asked him about it, and he was like, oh, I did? Did I say that? Oh, I didn't know that. So, who knows? But if changes had been book 10, as it is rumored to have been...
Yes.
I think I've seen this Q&A where he's answering and he's saying, originally I had intended changes to be book 10, but then, you know, some stories like happened and he had to move in a couple of books.
Yeah, but yeah. Book 10 makes it a Denarian book. So that means he finds out he has a daughter and the Denarians are involved.
I'm not sure he intended that until he actually made the second Denarian book, that it should be every 5 books.
I thought that was planned out a lot earlier.
I think it was like, okay, I need to the next book, Denarians are soon. I did book 5, now it's book 10. I guess I could make that a thing. I don't think he planned it that specifically from the start. I think
considering he stuck to it, and he's answered questions that, yes, the Denarians are going to be in book 20.
Yeah, because he decided when he did book 10 that he would do that. I think he did decided it there. We can ask him when he comes.
Yes, we need to ask him, but... that implies that he changed a lot more than everything else at a much later date than I would have expected, because that means that he, on the fly, decided that book 15 is going to have Denarians and then that book 20 is going to have Denarians, rather than he planned it out all in the beginning.
I think he planned it out in the beginning, but it's like, it was fluid. It's fluid. It's not that specific as you're making it out to be.
He has moved things around.
But, a lot of writers do this, right? I mean, you're the writer, so you probably know better than me, but they have the general ideas, the beginning, the middle, and the end, and then they can just kind of move some other stuff around in between there, right?
Yeah, but it depends on what that event is exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, he moved Proven Guilty and Deadbeat because he got the hard book deal and he wanted to move up Deadbeat and the T-Rex Dinosaur.
Yeah.
But, like, moving changes from a Denarian book to not a Denarian book... changing anything with a Denarian book, that's pretty significant considering it overarcs the entire series.
I'd like to see Nicodemus come and just, like, knock on Harry's door and say, we're killing the Red Court. You're with us. Let's go.
Force them to be good guys, like, on the same side because of his daughter. Oh, that would have been good.
Yeah, right?
I mean...
But have Nick be the instigator. Because Nick said in Skin Game... we would have eliminated the Red Court anyway. We needed to do that. We would have loved to work with you for it.
And in Small Favor, he said this, like, our goals aren't very far from your own. You don't believe us, but, like, if...
Maybe Winter Night Harry doesn't happen. Maybe Lashiel Harry happens.
I don't know. See, but what would promote Harry to work with the Dunarians rather than...
Maggie.
But I'm saying rather than work with Mab, what... Why would he have to make that choice then just because Dickadine's
Because if the Dunarians were already involved in the situation when Harry gets involved, he can't get them out. It's not like he's going to Nick for power when he breaks his back. It's that Nicodemus is already fighting the Red Court and Maggie is tied up involved.
That
doesn't make any sense to me, though. Like, he could still just go to Mab. There's
nothing. Sense to you?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Like, he makes a decision not to go with the Dunarians. What, are the Dunarians threatening his daughter?
I would honestly see it as, like, Dunarians versus Red Court. The Red Court has his daughter. Dresden's throwing in on the team that's against the Red Court.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe it would make sense, but I like the way Jim did it better.
That's fair. We're speculating on what if Jim did it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder if... I mean, at that point, Lash is already gone because it's past White Knight, which is book 9. So that would have still happened if we go with everything else as the same. Mm-hmm. But would Mab still have come in? Or would he have asked for Lash's coin back?
See, that's what I'm disagreeing with. I still think because we have the unless Jim Butcher rewrote it differently, we have the evidence to say he would have chosen Mab.
And there is other evidence that he would still have gone to the Winter Court in other ways, like the Margaret and all of the shit that she did, tying him to Leah of the Winter Court and stuff.
And Leah being the godmother.
Yes. And all of that does push him towards going to Mab.
Mm.
But
how strong would Harry be? I don't think this is even on the list, but I just got this thought that, like, how, like, if he went just full on, took everything he could, so he went Winter Night, and he got a coin, and he did a Dark Hollow.
He'd be a god.
Yeah. Dark Hollow is just god.
He'd probably be as powerful as Mab.
Probably. Maybe. Well, Dark Hollow puts him
as strong. The Dark Hollow required a lot of setup with a lot of powerful spirits, so if he just did it kind of, you know, willy-nilly, whenever, not with all these special spirits that had to be summoned first and stuff, then he wouldn't be as powerful, but he'd probably still be god tier, I guess.
So, he has demon reach, and all of the demons' baddies up in those crystals down there.
Oh, he just eats them.
Yes. If he did the Dark Hollow on demon reach with the Winter Knight and a coin...
Do they count? Does it have to be spirits?
Harry could just walk past the outer gates and, like, fart, and all of the outsiders would die. And now that is on the podcast forever.
But I'm not sure he would be able to eat all the things out there on the island, because it seems to me that Dark Hollow specifically is necromantic magic, and it has to be spirits.
So they were summoning a bunch of spirits to get them in the area that they could then eat them, but all of the living people in the area would have also died.
Mm. But
their souls would have been taken out of their bodies.
There are also
evil demon things have souls?
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily whether or not they have souls. It's they're devouring their essence. They have essence, they have energy, right? They have that supernatural, you know, bulk to them. And that's
we've only seen the Dark Hollow work with mortal spirits. Yeah. If it's a spirit inside a body or a non-corporeal shape.
They were summoning up the Earl King so that they could eat the Earl King in the Wild Hunt.
No.
Earl King's alive.
So they could the spirits of the Wild Hunt, which are human-based.
It's non-corporeal entities.
Not all of the spirits are human-based, though, because, like, Vatarung.
When the Wild Hunt comes back in Cold Days, though, Vatarung's in there. He sees a bunch of, like, I think actual humans in there, too.
So, I mean, there are humans in the Wild Hunt.
So pretty much, if you, like, almost anything, from what my understanding of the Wild Hunt is, if you want in the Wild Hunt, you can join the Wild Hunt. Doesn't matter who or what you are. So if they're going to eat the Wild Hunt...
No, I don't think they were eating the Wild Hunt. I think the Wild Hunt was attracting the spirits that would then be eaten. I was wrong about the other things.
So maybe I'm wrong about the Wild Hunt, though.
Sorry, say that again?
I mean, those spirits are the Wild Hunt. That's what makes up the Hunt.
The spirits that were being eaten by the Dark Hollow and the Wild Hunt are separate. The Wild Hunt was attracting the spirits.
Okay, I kind of see what you're saying now, yeah.
I could be wrong, though. But I don't think...
I mean, it might have done both.
I always think you're wrong, so whatever.
That's true. Also, I did reread back in Skin Game. There was a moment where Harry could have protected Hannah Asher and himself from the rocks falling, but he decided not to.
Yeah, because he had to make that choice.
She was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Hannah Asher.
Yeah, she was a pretty cool character. You just like her because she was described so pretty. But you're like,
And she's Jewish would make him Jewish. Just a nice, good Jewish boy attracted to Jewish girls.
That's true.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't get to pick werewolves like others. No,
we should have titled this episode the episode where Alex just rags on me.
Where Alex dissents on everything.
Yeah. That's every
episode. This is what happens when Justin is not here to keep her in check.
And me. Justin, whatever, do you Alex. Like the in-between? All right.
I'm glad we get to have a discussion about it, though.
What's the next one?
Okay, this one is from Justin. What if De Morn had gotten a hold of Dresden first, and Elaine was the one that was left running around and stuff?
Wait, I thought he did get a hold of Dresden first.
No.
What?
Oh my god.
So okay. in terms of the enthralment, not in terms of the
Okay. Okay.
My thoughts on this are Dresden has a huge advantage because of Leah that Elaine doesn't have.
Mm.
So because Dresden has Leah as a resource, and this comes up to haunt him like all up through Grave Peril.
What? I thought he meets Leah after all this happens.
No. He does, but
He meets Leah after he, if you remember in Ghost Story, after he runs away and kills the walker, or defeats the walker, he doesn't kill the walker, then, like, after that, between him facing the Morn and after facing the walker, Leah gets a hold of him and says, I can give you power.
I'm sorry, what I meant was it happens after De Morn tries to enthral him.
Yes, that's the point.
So what I'm saying is Leah has a huge hand in De Morn's death.
Okay.
Because Leah gave Harry power.
But if Harry had gotten enthralled first, then Leah would not be able to give him power. He's already enthralled.
Maybe. Maybe she has godmother powers that
can unenthrall him just at will.
But my question is, if De Morn and an enthralled Elaine working together couldn't enthrall Harry, then why would De Morn alone be able to enthrall Harry?
Well, we're not asking about why this change happened. We're discussing what happens afterward.
No, I know. Okay. I'm saying the implications. Because a lot of these things we're bringing up, there's proof in based on what's already happened to kind of point us in a certain direction.
That think I can try to explain away. If on this hypothetical, De Morn still is the good father figure that they both love, and he just asks Harry for some help and enthralls him with no suspicion beforehand. What gives De Morn away is that Harry was uncomfortable and worried about Elaine, and then he feels the dark magic around.
That's fair.
If he's the first one taken, then there's no warning.
What I'd like to believe, Jim, this is speculation. What I'd like to believe Jim is pointing at is that Harry is better able to withstand that kind of mental magic than Elaine is.
Yeah, there are hints that way, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah. Maybe it would have been really interesting. Maybe neither of them would have been enthralled. And it would have, like, totally changed the story.
That would be really interesting. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Alex?
Maybe Harry never would have ended up before the council because he never would have had to kill him because he could have just sought out help first.
The thing that seems most likely to me is that Harry would be enthralled, watching De Morn and Elaine fight. Elaine's dying, and he's emotionally disturbed. Leah shows up and gives him a bargain to give him power to break the enthrallment in return for going to her, whatever. And everything else happens the same way.
Can we agree this is happening inside Justin's house?
Something like that, yeah.
How is Elaine getting in? Because she's clearly not intending him no ill will when she goes to help Harry.
Okay, maybe she makes a domain in the Never Never and pulls his brain into it and then talks to him there.
What?
If he's behind
Leah
behind
can mean no ill will to Du Morn, but Harry means ill will to Du Morn.
Yes. that's a good technicality. I'm going to hang on it.
Fairy. It's all about the technicalities of the fairies.
Yeah, I guess.
Definitely would have been
Leah could literally just like walk in, meaning no ill will to anyone in there, but then offer Harry the deal, which lets Harry do what he wants to do, which is ill will against the thing.
It seems if it weren't that way, fairies would have been exploiting this. But maybe, yeah.
No, I think.
Well, Jim didn't write a history of fairies. He's writing Harry Dresden. There could be lots of times where that happened.
I think Leah only was seeking out Harry because she already had a debt from Harry's mom. Right? They already had made a deal. That's what made her his godmother.
Yes.
So I don't think any of this would have happened without that. Like, the reason why she would have been coming into the building with
Ill will at all. I'm not trying to say that she's not his godmother.
Yes.
So it's like everything is the same up until De Morn takes Dresden instead of Elaine.
I'm just saying on the subject of fairy technicalities. Like, it wouldn't just be a random fairy entering the building, whether she has ill will or not. She's only doing it because she's his godmother.
Yeah, that's implied.
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't implied, I didn't.
I think we're all agreeing, we just don't think we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next one?
Sure.
Okay. What if Harry had waited to leave the boat at the end of Changes until Murphy had gotten back to him? Would Kincaid have shot him in front of Murphy? Would he have waited until after their date? What would have happened?
I think Kincaid would have seen lots of things through his sniper rifle that would have made him delay, at least. I don't think Kincaid would have shot Dresden in front of Murphy. I think if Kincaid saw them going into the boat together after they return, that could also be awkward.
I mean,
Kincaid could also like separate Harry and Karen at some point during their date and then deal with it that way, because Harry told Kincaid that he wouldn't see it coming.
Yeah.
This one is simple. Do you think that he doesn't have trank rounds? Like, he just has to shoot Murphy with a trank round. She passes out, then kill Harry.
Well,
that wouldn't change.
Here's the thing. Kincaid isn't necessarily coming. He's coming prepared to kill Harry. He might be over-prepared, but I find it a long stretch of being prepared to kill somebody means coming prepared with sniper trank rounds.
Yeah, be prepared with explosives.
I'm pretty sure Kincaid picked that time and place because he knew Harry was going to be standing there in date clothes, not really concentrating on anything else. I don't know, maybe not. What do you guys think?
He was on a building. He could be tracking Harry anywhere on the city. Like, if you can snipe somebody from over a mile away, that's a 1 mile radius from where you're sitting where you can kill someone. You don't have to be like preparing to kill them at some time and some place.
I mean, there are lines of sight and buildings in the way. Being a sniper is very specific.
Yes. But the way Kincaid killed Harry, it leads me to believe that he could do it pretty much any time, any place, as long as Harry's not like inside. So once Harry goes outside, Kincaid can kill him.
Yeah.
If Kincaid knows where he is.
I like the idea, just because it would tear her apart, is that they go on their date, they come back.
You fucking Harry bitch! Dies.
Harry dies, and Murphy thinks she has the kiss of death.
Don't you
That'd
think
be really funny.
That's suffer enough? Like,
that's what I'm saying. If she got tranquilized, she'd have survivor's guilt, because she'd literally be laying there when Harry dies.
And I like that, but I...
Also, if we go with... Murphy having the kiss of death, when Harry comes back, he can say, yeah, I survived.
Oh, that's good. Like, he's the only one she can be with because he survived the kiss of death.
Yes.
Suck it, Alex.
Murphy's gonna die.
No, she's not. It was trolling. That was very successful trolling on Jim's part, because how many people were discussing that, thinking of it as real, finding out reasons that Murphy would live? Jesus Christ.
100% Murphy's going to die and come back as a Valkyrie or whatever.
As in Einherjarrn. Yes. I totally want that to happen at some point.
There's no way it's not going to happen.
How many people thought that Murphy was definitely going to get Vitellacius and be one of the knights.
I thought Murphy would be a knight, but nope.
To be fair, she was at times.
Yeah, she
I thought
did
she
it
would be a permanent
a little
knight.
Bit.
Oh, doesn't she literally say she doesn't want to be a knight like 50,000 times?
Yeah, that's why I thought she would be a knight.
No, the whole whole anyway. We can keep talking
but
about
no, this thing that I remember Jim and one of his things saying that he kind of likes to convert your expectations and just kind of whatever. And so his description once was that he saw someone have this really long dissertation style breakdown of why Murphy absolutely was going to be the next Knight of the Cross. And then he just said, ah.
Yeah.
It doesn't even make any sense. Like half of the thing that makes you a Knight of the Cross is wanting to be Knight of the Cross. You have to volunteer for it and want it with like every part of you, right?
I don't think so.
Is that what Butters did? Butters fell into Butters' head, and he was like, oh, I guess I'm a knight now.
But Butters could have chosen to put the sword down, and like I'm saying, to be more than just a part-time knight, you have to want to do it.
I don't think Butters wanted to be a knight. I think Butters had an inherent desire to help people.
I think
the difference is, like, I want to be a knight as in, like, I want to go get a burger after this podcast. Like, I actually desire those things.
Right.
But Butters, the character that he is, he's always trying to help people. And so when an opportunity is presented for him to help people in a way that he couldn't before, he's having a hard time saying no to that because that's who he is. Butters helps people. Being a knight would help him help people. It's not that he wanted to be a it's not that he wanted to be a knight as if, like, I want a burger. But it's just like, well, if I can have a burger every night and not worry about, you know, any adverse dietary effects,
Are you guys ready for this piece of knowledge I'm going to drop? Are you ready?
Butters
wanted to be a Jedi Knight.
Fuck you. Well.
He wanted to be a Jedi Knight. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be a Jedi Knight.
That's worse than a pun, okay? That's
what he wanted, though. He has a lightsaber, literally. That totally proves my point.
By the way, I think the difference between Butters wanting to help people and someone and a person who wants to be a knight is
Jedi Knight.
Daniel, for example.
Who?
Daniel Carpenter.
Daniel Carpenter.
He's too young to be a knight.
See, I don't think Daniel really has any significance to the story yet. We've only really seen him all that much in Ghost Story, right?
Yeah.
In which he was doing the annoying teenager thing that fucks everything up.
I think if Jim was going to give him a more significant role, Jim would have developed his character a little bit more than I piss everyone off.
He's taking the same place Molly took when she was at that point in her life.
I hated Molly in White Knight.
I hate Molly now too.
Molly's okay.
She shouldn't be with Dresden, that's all.
She should.
Molly needs to get over Dresden, by the way. We all know he's ending up with Lucio.
What if Harry ends up... No, I'm just kidding.
Justin loves Karen.
What?
Justin loves Karen. That's it.
To be fair, Dresden also loves Susan.
You know,
they are destined for each other. They both have a kiss to death.
If Susan was still alive, I would ship her over Molly.
That's surprising, considering how many people hate her.
Yeah.
But
Susan made some difficult choices.
Yeah, that's going to be a full topic for an episode, I think. I'm going to argue, and people are going to hate me, and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Why are people going to hate you? Because you don't like money? I mean, who likes Molly?
Wait, what are you talking about, Alex?
Ethics, but go on with the what-if thing. What if Ivy wasn't the arbiter in Death Masks? What if someone else had been called between Harry and Ortega?
Do you want to go this, like, person by person?
What do you mean?
So there's a bunch of different... According to, like, Dresden's spiel about who else assigned the signatories in White Knight, we know a couple of examples of who could have replaced Ivy. So what if X replaced Ivy?
Yeah, okay.
What if Vatarung replaced Ivy?
I thought this one was more of a question of what... What would have happened to Ivy if she'd not met Dresden?
Both.
Well, a combination of both. Like, how does it affect the series? And since Ivy's part of the series, how does that also affect Ivy?
Yeah, so let's see. If Vatarung had replaced Ivy, then Harry would have gotten a lot more help, probably, from Batarang. Maybe he would have known who he needed to go to for questions and changes.
I also think Batarang would have kind of been a little bit more of a mentor towards Harry. And so, like, because no one at the White Council is really, like, associating with Harry at this point, right? He's just started this vampire war with the council. Like, pretty much everyone
he's
on
just
his
messed
team
up hates him. Right around there.
pretty much everyone on his team hates him until Deadbeat, where he, you know, stops the Dark Hallow and becomes a warden. And so, at that point, it's just like, who's Harry going to turn to? When it like kind of like puts like a father figure that Harry doesn't hate, like John Marcone.
Yeah, I mean,
because like Jim basically said, like, John Marcone's a great father figure, isn't he? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Too bad he's evil. Yeah, right. So that kind of puts
Harry's
like
father figure is his grandfather. Right? I mean, dad's a falling
but
out.
He doesn't know Ebenezer is his grandfather yet. Ebenezer's always busy with the
Death
War.
But that's still his father figure.
It would have been interesting because in Death Mass, Harry told Ebenezer to butt out and let the duel go on because he doesn't want people to get hurt. But if Batarang was there, I figure it would be kind of like a conversation that they had in Cold Days, in which Batarang is leading him to the right conclusions without having to direct him too much. So he probably would have been like, there's this problem. I wonder how you get out of it, asshole. And shit like that.
Yeah, and there's probably lots of different times, like, in the later books between changes and death masks where Harry could go to Batarang for help in that way and kind of get that kind of guidance that he never really had.
I wonder what we're just all assuming Batarang would just help him, which is what he's been doing. But we don't really know why.
Maybe somewhere way, way, way back, Harry's a descendant of Batarang.
I wouldn't argue against that. We just don't have any proof. But there's also, Batarang's a wizard. So there's that as well.
Batarang's also a deity. So there's that too.
Yeah, and he's very much against the outsiders, and he's working with Mab a ton, and Harry works with Mab.
Well, Kringle's working with Mab a ton.
Batarang has to work with Mab.
It's implied that Batarang trained the original Merlin, right?
Yeah.
That's just thing. If that was something I imagined or not.
Maybe Batarang had a deal with Merlin, kind of like Fairy Godfather-esque, where, and, like, you know, there's all of this circle jerk about Harry being descended from the original Merlin. So, like, what if there
Jim
was a
Jim has said
of...
it's not true.
Okay.
He's not descended. He's from the same, like, mentor line.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, Metroline. So what if the Merlin set up a kind of like linear Godfather-esque thing with Batarang, where Batarang is the godfather, like Leah is the godmother of all of his mentees, etc., etc. And so that's finally passed down to Dresden.
Yeah.
Is it clear what I said?
Yeah.
Alex, you look confused.
Oh, I was just thinking about it. It's like, that's kind of complicated. I don't know what you would have to pay in order to get a bargain like that, but...
Merlin has a lot of things... The Merlin probably had a lot of things to offer Batarang.
Well, he was also his student.
Yes.
So, it's, I don't know. The relation... We need to find out more about Merlin.
Yeah, but... we need to know more. All we know is he's super powerful.
So basically, Jim, please.
Almost. Jim,
yes.
Please? Can you more Merlin?
Jim,
more?
Please? All right. So what if it was a dragon? Because there are two that are individual signatories of the Accords. They could
There's
have...
Ferrorax, and who's the other one? Do we know?
No, I don't think we know his name.
I think if Jim mentioned it, it wasn't in the books. It would have been in, like, some interview somewhere that I haven't seen.
Yeah. I mean, dragons are very much survival of the fittest, right?
Yep. My thoughts are, dragon sees... sanctity of duel being violated, dragon kills everything. Dragon doesn't care. Dragon kills everything.
I mean,
the whole point is to uphold the accord, so to kill everyone there would be not doing that.
Well, here's the thing. So either you have to go the dragon sees Ortega trying to violate the accords by pulling a gun underneath his flesh mask. Dragon kills Ortega. Dragon doesn't see that. Dresden's winning, but Ortega gets hit with a sniper round. Dragon doesn't know what to think. Dragon cleans the mess up by killing everyone and saying, they both did it.
Justice by annihilation.
Yeah. Dead men tell no lies. Or truths, for that matter.
I mean, the Archive does try and kill Ortega, right?
No, she was just killing the vampires that were attacking.
Yeah.
Well,
and then she
by way of Kincaid.
Kincaid was also just killing the vampires.
I think he just couldn't get a shot off of... he couldn't get a shot at Ortega. No, doesn't he hit Ortega?
No.
Nope. Only Martin does.
Yeah.
This I'm like 90% sure that he actually does hit Ortega.
Nope.
But the vampires are able to... Let me look. Keep talking about other stuff.
Okay. So my thinking is, like, with Kincaid and Ivy... The battle happens, and then afterward, Harry's sitting there with Kincaid and Ivy, and they're just like, Kincaid's like, well, Dresden was winning, but Ortega got shot. So Kincaid's not sure what to think about who violated the sanctity of the duel. So if
third authority, which is what happened to
him. Yeah. So if we are assuming that these dragons are super powerful and super aware... And, you know, have that kind of understanding of what the red can do. If Harry can see Ortega pulling a gun under his flash mask, a dragon probably would too.
You think Ortega wouldn't have been able to get away with that cheating?
Either that, well, which would probably influence why he chose Ivy.
Yeah, did he choose Ivy, or was she just randomly selected?
Ortega was the one who was bringing the. Charges against Harry. So, as we saw in Small Favor, if you're the accusing party, you're the one who chooses the arbiter.
That doesn't seem fair. I'm the one that's accusing you of doing asshole-ish things. I'm going to choose someone I like to arbiter.
Well, they have to stay neutral through the accords.
Yes, but, yeah, you know,
I mean...
Harry chose Ivy because they have a working relationship, because they're nice to each other.
Yes. Rather than choosing somebody who would be actually neutral.
Exactly. That's just like, that doesn't seem fair. But,
how the accords are written, so.
Yeah.
Semi-immortal shapeshifter guru in Ukraine.
Yeah, that one guy that...
We know nothing about this person, so we can't really speculate much.
Yeah, we get one line of description and then nothing else.
Okay.
It would have been... interesting for that person to show up.
Yeah.
Maybe in Maystarts.
Yeah, maybe.
So the other big implication of this is what happens in Small Favor when Nick tries to get Ivy through Harry because of that working relationship. What if Nick tries to get the semi-immortal shapeshifter guru or said dragon through Harry?
Or Vatarung.
Yeah.
That would have been hilarious.
Vatarung, maybe. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I think, from what I understand, the two dragons who signed a dragon capital D. Like, there are other dragons as well.
I think Jim said that there were three left. There were three left, and then Michael killed one, so there's two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. I understood it as there are dragons like Ferrorax, and then there are more normal dragons.
That might be
I think he said that somewhere. But the dragon Michael killed was a more regular dragon of a far lower power level than what Ferrorax and the other dragon is. They are dragon, capital D, original gangster.
I thought the dragon that kidnapped Charity was part of that, too. I'm pretty confident in my remembrance of Jim saying that there were three dragons and then Michael killed one.
Maybe, yeah.
We'll probably get yelled at by someone and told that we're wrong, which is awesome. Keep doing that. I love it.
Yeah. I love it when people correct me. That way I don't learn bad things.
Before we move on to the next one.
All right.
Correctly, in Chapter 30 of Death Masks, There was a hissing sound, a thump, and a big section over Ortega's chest dented in. Scarlet sprayed out behind him, and an instant later, a booming sound. Basically, he got shot by Kincaid, like I was saying.
Martin.
Someone. No, it was...
Martin was the original sniper shot.
Martin was the one who shot Ortega.
If anything happens to him after that, and the duel devolves into chaos, then it might have been Kincaid.
Yeah, but the first shot is...
The first shot is Martin.
Yeah.
Because Kincaid's with Ivy. Why would Kincaid do that?
Yeah.
Because he's responsible for the duel...
Yeah, but Kincaid didn't know that Ortega was changing.
Kincaid didn't know that, because there's a line where, like...
Ivy asked
Kincaid what happened, and Kincaid said, Harry was winning, but Ortega got shot.
But if they're both watching the duel, like, why would Martin be able to see that he's producing
sniper rifle?
Kincaid wouldn't.
Martin, I don't think he cared that Ortega was cheating. He was
Martin's goal and was to continue the war.
Yep. That was it. Yeah, and if it would have been easier killing Dresden, he would have.
Dresden sees Martin later with the sniper rifle. We know Martin shoots Ortega.
They talk about it.
Yeah.
Where it's even said between them that his goal was the war was to continue.
Okay. You didn't say that before. That's what I was reading.
The next one. What if Peabody hadn't fallen for Harry's trick in TC in the Turn Code? Which, by the way, is my biggest pet peeves about Dresden Files is this one thing. It's such a... That's one of the things where I feel like it's like a Deus Ex Machina. It was... We just pull out of the hat.
Well, I think it's less of Deus Ex Machina, and I think it's more of Harry being clever.
I think all the other things, I got a much better feeling, much more of a feeling than Harry being clever. Here, it was just pure dumb luck. Which, granted, happens a lot, but...
Well, Harry took a gamble, and it worked. Same thing with him in Skin Game with Goodman Gray. He does the exact same thing. It's not revealed to the reader until the end.
I just think it's set up way better than in this situation. I just don't like this situation. I don't think it's set up very well.
So Peabody doesn't fall for it. Morgan takes the blame for killing Alaron Lafortier. Morgan gets killed by Council. Harry gets in big trouble from the Council because of the BS that happens on Demon Reach. And the fact that they don't get Peabody.
So we're assuming that everything at Demon Reach and Morgan still dying, everything is the same except for the fact that they don't have...
The picture of Peabody.
Which, that leaves that Morgan still wouldn't die.
No, like, because...
He would be executed instead. He wouldn't have shot Peabody.
Yeah. So when Harry goes to Edinburgh after the Gambit, he arrives in the middle of Morgan's trial.
Mm-hmm.
And they are about to execute him when he said last call for testimony comes up, and then Harry steps up.
Yeah, and if they didn't have the picture, then they didn't have proof.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
and
semantics,
also, well,
it was
picture plus mouse.
That's not how it happens.
The evidence was picture plus mouse.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, if he didn't go through that way, then they wouldn't have the evidence of the picture or mouse.
Yes.
Because if they already had a way to Demon Reach, then they didn't need to go through Chicago, and that was the trick.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that could happen is just nothing happens. Peabody sits there, doesn't do anything, there's no massive fight against Binder on Demon Reach. And it's just like the White Court kind of gets a little upset at the White Council, vice versa. There might be a conflict there. Then Shag Nasty shows up, and probably everyone tries to pitch in and kill it.
Yeah, they might still be able to get Thomas back, at least.
Yeah. I don't know. With Injun Joe like being there at the beginning of the fight with Shag Nasty, Injun Joe and Ebenezer, I think they could kill Shag Nasty.
Hey, Oakley. Gonna kick your ass up in between your ears.
Good job.
Injun Joe.
He's so good. Love me some Injun Joe.
Yeah. I want to know more about those race sisters that show up, and we also we see earlier in the book as well.
Yeah, the ones that go into a fight naked, except for piercings.
Yeah. My kind of girls.
I want to know, did her finger grow back?
Yeah, Ingram will grow back.
Laris?
No, one of the sisters got their finger bitten off by the Shagnasty, and it was just like, did it, like, grow back, or does she just have a stump?
It probably grows back.
I think they can grow back, yeah. I think if you cut off a White Court vampire's arms, they can grow back.
I want proof. I want to see that happen.
Well, I mean, it happens with Red Court vamps.
Yeah, but isn't that a flesh mask?
No, you can, like, blow off a Red Court vampire's real arm, because, funny enough, it's only flesh outside. So the arm's still in there, and they get blown off, okay. And they grow back.
Interesting, at least. If they don't catch Peabody, I wonder what Peabody tries to do in changes. And how that affects White Council.
That was... Fuck it. That's going to come up when I'm arguing about Susan. God damn it. Because Harry is involved with people who can like do mind control things. Then he finds out he has a daughter and he doesn't tell the council about it.
Yep.
And it's just like the fact that Peabody would still exist, then...
The fact that... So this actually leads into one of the other ones I kind of wanted to get to, right? If Peabody doesn't fall for this, they don't know Lucio is under mind control. Lucio and Harry are still in a relationship.
See, now that's a good outcome.
When Susan comes knocking, saying, our daughter got captured. That gets awkward.
Yeah, and then because Lucio is going to help him, maybe she does the same thing that she did in Changes anyway, but he worries a lot more about the safety of the White Council and probably gets a lot more pissed off when they can't show up.
And the safety of Lucio. As an individual, because Lucio is going rogue to help Dresden, if Lucio does go rogue to help Dresden.
Yeah. This is why I'm always... we talked about this, I think, on episodes past, or at least we talked about it internally. This is why I'm always so wary of speculation, because my thought is always, you know, they would have found out eventually. If Harry was smart enough to trick Peabody, even if this trick had failed, right, he would have figured out some other way of tricking him.
Yeah.
Or some other way of finding who it was.
I mean, we need that to get found out because we need to know how bad everything is inside the White Council.
Right.
But it's just, you know, what if things happen slightly differently? That's all.
Yeah.
It's okay to stretch your imagination.
I mean, Harry would have died, right? Because wasn't that the whole thing? He had to figure out who was the traitor so that he wasn't blamed as the traitor.
Hmm.
That was Morgan.
Am I totally... I have to reread the books. I'm sorry, I've been messing up.
Yes, you should reread the books that you have a podcast about.
I really remember that was the whole thing. Like, he was racing to figure out who... Or not he would have died. What's his name?
Morgan would have still died.
Right, yes.
Just so I think Harry would have been able to do something to... get him out of that, especially if Shagnasty shows up, like, in it, like, involved, just like, Harry's just like, I can't control this thing wants me dead, this thing is involved, why would I be involved in this if Shagnasty's trying to kill me?
He says that the whole way through, right? Like, every time he's like, why would I, that's the whole insane thing about it.
I don't think the council was aware of Shagnasty until Jinjo fought him on Demon Reach.
I mean, greater than just Shagnasty. Like, we as the readers, seeing it from Harry's point of view, know it's insane for them to ever suspect Harry, even from the beginning, right?
Well, it's not insane, because Harry's a former warlock. Harry killed people with magic. He broke the law of magic. Morgan keeps trying to think Harry did bad things.
I know.
It's
I'm saying you can apply that logic to this situation also.
I want to put on my writing hat for a minute. And so there's a certain amount of things that he did by revealing that Peabody was infiltrating and doing mind control and stuff. We were shown that the White Council is falling apart from the inside. And if you take that away, what does he replace it with in terms of author showing things? Maybe we get to see who was on Demon Reach and controlling the spiders and all of that stuff. Instead, Peabody is still hiding and doing his mental control, but maybe we get to see a glimpse at who was still there.
That would also be interesting. Maybe Cowl shows up on Demon Reach.
Yeah, that's the biggest
conspiracy. Cowl shows up on Demon Reach, and like one of the White Council one of the senior council sees Cal, it's just like, oh man, that's, pardon my pun, but that's a witch hunt waiting to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially if Cal Unkmori, if she's alive as well, whatever, were on the White Council. It's like, why are you over there instead of over here helping us? Mm. And then starts the witch hunt, and then Peabody, and then more stuff. Like that would have.
But Dresden's seen Kumori's face.
No, she didn't.
No.
Not on the stairs after he talked to Sheila?
Mm-mm.
Never seen her face.
Okay.
I wish. I want to know where they are. Jim, please.
I'm pretty sure all of the really important answers Jim will answer at some point in the next 20 years.
We'll know who they are by the end of the books, but
yeah.
I want to know now! Damn it!
Do we want to talk about this last one? Or any of the other ones?
Yeah, so the last one. What if Margaret and or Malcolm hadn't died?
Well, if Margaret doesn't die, then Harry gets to be all wizardy his entire life.
Yeah.
And doesn't have his abandonment issues, which drive a lot of his decisions that happens in the books.
Or, let's say, what if Margaret died when he was, like, 4, instead of when he was born?
Okay.
Then he gets, like...
Then we would know that... Then he would have been, like... Him and his grandfather would have been introduced, I assume.
Maybe not.
Possibly.
Thomas never met his grandfather either.
Yeah. Methinks that Margaret and Ebenezer didn't really have a great relationship at that point, so I don't think Harry would get to meet Ebenezer through Margaret.
Yeah.
Because there was like that one rebellious thing that happened, and then Margaret ran away and fell into bad company, and as Ebenezer was just like,
fuck this bitch.
I want to do things, but I can't. Yeah.
I'm done. She can go make her own mistakes, and then she died, and he was like, oh, shit. That was not supposed to happen.
Yeah. So...
I mean, if any of those were true, it would just fundamentally change the books so much.
That's why we want to talk about it. We always speculate on what Jim's going to do, right? Why not speculate on what Jim definitely won't do?
For me, it's just a lot harder it's so much more open. There are less rules, and I'm not good working without boundaries.
I think this is a really cool kind of thing to do in terms of like a thought experiment, because instead of taking what you know will happen and the expectation that you already have of it, try to change a little bit of the story and see how much better it might be, which is something I have to do all the time. So this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely think it's pretty cool. It's just a lot harder for me, at least. Mm-hmm. To do.
That's fair. But I mean, like, all of us are just, like, vomiting out ideas. You can feel free to add on to whatever we say. Don't feel like you have to come up with your own ideas.
I think Margaret should still have died giving birth to him because of all of the reasons that she died.
So let's go the other way. What if Malcolm stays alive?
Yeah.
Harry has a father.
Yeah. I think
Harry has one. From what I saw when he talked to his parent, seems like a pretty awesome dad.
Yeah.
I think that would
Malcolm, I'm going to bet some money and say that Malcolm probably knew that Margaret was a witch.
Yeah, I think so.
So when Harry started showing magical signs, I would think Malcolm would at least know a way to get into contact with somebody who can get him proper training.
Yeah, I mean, there comes the question of like, would Malcolm know how to contact Leah? Leah did know Malcolm, so
there's that. Okay.
Or would Malcolm there's know that. How to contact Ebenezer
maybe,
and get him?
Maybe Dumorne comes forward as the person who's willing to give Harry training, and rather than adopting him.
Are we going into the TV show now? Because that's kind of what happened.
No, because that's Uncle Justin, not.
That's the territory of bad.
Yeah. But I honestly think it would be more like, do any of you guys watch The Flash?
No.
No, no one watches The Flash. It's only one of like the most whacked TV shows on TV right now.
Which one?
In The Flash. There's
well, I just don't watch TV, so.
In The Flash?
Okay, yes. There's this whole backstory with Barry Allen's father. But basically,
oh, that one. It's such a shit show. Oh.
Okay. Basically, the father kind of takes like a backseat to his life and is only featured in the story very, very rarely. It's kind of like a like an auxiliary character, and I think that's kind of how this would go. Like, it would kind of just be maybe someone that Harry visits when he's having tough times or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fair. But how does Harry's, like, Harry's upbringing was rough because he was orphaned at 6 and then spent a lot of time in orphanages and then got adopted by Dumourne and then had that whole crazy drama with Dumourne.
Like, yeah, I'm saying...
What if all of that drama doesn't happen and Harry has a normal childhood?
I don't think it would have prevented it from happening. The story would definitely be different, but I think he still might have found Dumourne as a mentor, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Or Dumourne finds him, like happened right in the TV show.
Yeah.
We should stop mentioning altogether.
Look,
I enjoyed the TV show.
Well, that's an opinion.
I would have enjoyed the TV show somewhat. Had I not known about Dresden Files beforehand.
I would have enjoyed the TV show somewhat if it wasn't fucking horrible.
Well, okay. We had this really small hint that's never been mentioned again that Malcolm was murdered and didn't just die of an aneurysm. Mm. Who murdered him, and how does that change the story if they didn't?
Dumourne.
Except that... Since that's what happened in the TV show, the problem with that is that...
Maybe that's Jim trolling all of us, saying, this actually happened. Let's put it in the TV show. No one will believe it since it's so bad.
Well,
no one's going to take the TV show as canon. So let me put something that's actually canon in there.
Why would he have waited so long to get him from the orphanages?
Because he had to be of a certain age before he could do
why
magic.
Why is he worth all the trouble until he has magical powers?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like... It really sounds like he's like, oh, there's this person I'm going to take over because they're worth it, rather than I'm going to watch this person and kill them and then just let them suffer until I have to deal with them, which it kind of does make sense if you just don't want to have a kid around.
Think about it this way, though. Like, vulnerable. As Harry's growing up in the orphanage, he's getting more and more and more desperate to find somebody to take him in. So when Dumourne finally does come, he's seen as the savior, rather than as, like, if Dumourne just kills Malcolm and then takes Harry at 6 years old. Like, that's how you get seen yourself as, like, captor, not savior. It would be a vast difference in how Harry perceives him.
That's true. So, if we're going with this idea that Dumourne killed Malcolm in order to get Harry years later, would he have done the same to Elaine's parents?
Do we know what happened to Elaine's parents?
We have no idea, but I'm thinking maybe someone died of an aneurysm. Mm-mm. Now that we think about it.
Possibly. We know Dumourne was collecting Starborn.
Yeah, and all we know is that her parents were dead, or didn't want her, gave her up in some way, I guess. Yeah. And I have seen the theory that she is actually Dumourne's daughter, just because we don't know what's actually going on.
Fair. I mean, my thought is, like, think of it from Dumourne's perspective. What's the difference in power between a 6-year-old who can't really do magic and a 10-year-old who can't really do magic? There's not really all that much. And in wizard terms, what's a 4-year difference? Wizards are very long-lived. 4 years is
And even if Harry got adopted or something, Harry, he would just kill those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, give him even more problems.
Give him even more reason to run into Dumourne when he's just like, I can make sure nothing happens.
You didn't put a twist on it. You killed your own father with your magical powers. You didn't know what you were doing. You killed your new family. I can help you control it.
Yeah, yeah, right? See?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's how you turn Harry to the dark side.
Yeah, I love that at one point Harry says, everyone that he said I love you to has died. And it turns out to be true so far. In some way. Like, he says it to Elaine, and then she dies. And then like, she said, he says it to Susan, and then he has to kill her, which is, like, one of the things, like, Murphy has a funeral. It's like, he really does have that kiss of death thing, so...
Murphy gonna die!
But if that's not happening, he still hasn't said it to her. Maybe he realized the
he
trick.
Didn't? I thought that happened at the end of Skid Games.
No, they just started kissing.
Oh, okay. Got right to the good stuff. All right.
Yeah. So it's just yes.
I know this is not what's happening in Skid Games, but I would have been so happy if, like, it's too short a time that's gone by. So it would have been so good if it's been like Murphy and Harry and Molly and what's her Anna Molly. Murphy, Harry, Margaret, and what's the spirit's name?
Bob?
No.
The new spirit.
Bonnie.
Bonnie. Yeah, yeah. The new spirit. All them living together as a happy family.
It looks like Harry is living with Molly right now, and he'll probably move in with Murphy at some point when they get more settled with their feelings.
I don't think he's living with Molly. I think he's living in Molly's apartment.
Yeah, she doesn't live there anymore.
She's the Winter Knight, or Winter Lady. She needs to live up elsewhere.
She still has an apartment. Well, she also has Arctis Menorah.
Yeah. Why wasn't he living on Demon Reach?
Because Maggie.
Because he wants to be with his child, and that's not a good place for his kid.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, no. If you've read Jury Duty, which is the short story that happens after Skin Game, he's living, like, Jim writes that he's living in Molly's apartment.
Yeah.
Which one is Jury Duty?
The one where he has to go do jury duty.
I did not read that, no.
Okay,
I don't feel like buying anthologies for one short story.
Yeah.
When I don't know any other author name, I'm just, like, not interested.
Yes, because all we need is briefcases, which I've been waiting for fucking years, and we'll be very, very happy. But I wanted Peacebox to open up with the Murphy family reunion again, and Harry is there with Murphy, and her sister and ex-husband, current brother-in-law, is there, and he's just kind of staring at Harry. It's like, you were dead. Yep, didn't take.
Those two don't get along.
I know, I love it.
It's really great. I love that scene. I love that scene with SplatterCon where they're, like, interrogating her against her will. And he just butts in. It's such a good scene. I think I'm going to listen to it again. Just because I want to hear it.
Okay. We've kind of reached the end of our list for this episode. So as we're getting onto other topics, we should probably wrap it up now. We do have a bunch of other questions that we'll probably do a part two, maybe even a part three. And if you have your own what if question, then you can send it to us and we'll add it to the list and we'll do this again because give us more feedback. And if you want to see all the other stuff that we're doing at Broken Jars, you can do it at brokenjars.xyz. Mm-hmm. And go ahead, Alex.
Check out the Alex Gaming Podcast. We record on Thursdays. We just did episode 4. And we're going to have special E3 coverage coming up.
Yeah, and I'm doing my high fantasy thing of fantasy and writing, which is tons of fun. Finally, we're getting to the first episode next week.
I'm also going to be starting on...
Alex, can you give us some more information about that high fantasy in writing podcast?
It is me, Jacob of 42, and my beta reader. And we're just, like, the first episode is just a giant introduction of us as writers and what we do, what we like. And then we'll move on to other topics like how to write fantasy or science fiction specifically, how to write in general, and basic community things, and things like that, and tropes. I'm so excited about it.
And don't forget my new show. No, wait. No new show.
Yeah, it other Broken Jars things that we're trying to get off the ground is, like, guilty pleasures about movies that we like way much more than they should have, and Super Fight at some point, and things like that. Am I forgetting anything?
You mean like the Dresden TV show?
Wait, did you talk about the actual thing we're starting, that we're actually starting, the Office podcast?
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
We're gonna do three episodes of The Office per episode of the podcast, definitely if you're a fan.
Are you doing the Good Office or the Bad Office?
The American one.
Oh, the Bad Office, yes.
I knew you'd say that, Andreas. Yeah.
And you can find all of the Dresden Files podcast things at dresdenfilespodcast.com. You can send us an email with the same address, and we'll post everything on Reddit, which you probably already know. That's it, right?
Okay. I believe so. Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's everything. So say bye.
Bye. Bye.